I'm John Hanson. I'm in for John Williams today. I'll take you through the Wintrust Business Lunch, then till 2, and then I'll be back with Your Money Matters. Not that talking about money today is all that good, but I think it's something that we have to process together, Elise Glink. Of course, you hear all the time at this time, thinklink.com. And boy, this has got people nervous, doesn't it?
It does. We are all nervous. I'm nervous. You're nervous. All of our listeners are nervous. And why wouldn't you be? We've got, as Steve Alexander said, all four of the indices are down 52-week lows. S&P 500 is down to a new low for 2022. I mean, these are scary things because someday we all want to retire.
Right. And I guess that should be your level of nervousness, right? I guess how close you are to that number. I mean, if you're 30 years out, these are the ups and downs that are going to happen. If you're 5 years out, okay, you're still got some time. If you're going to retire here at the end of the month, well, then there you go, right?
Well, the only thing I can say is if you are going to retire at the end of the month, you don't want to be cashing out everything anyway, right? Most people are, you know, in their 60s, maybe you're 70 years old and you're getting ready to retire. Maybe you're 55 or you were hoping to be 50 and one of those fire people. But the point is that even though, like, the S&P is down, NASDAQ is down almost 25% year to date. Okay, that's scary.
On May 9th. Wow.
Lots of time to recover.
Yeah,
right?
There you go.
But you shouldn't actually be thinking about cashing everything out and then putting it, what, under your mattress, because the odds are you're going to live another 20 to 30 years and you are going to need the stock market to power you through. So it's definitely a down day. We're down, in NASDAQ, you know, almost 5,000 points. It's a lot, but it's going to come back.
Yeah, right. And it's just such a weird, you know, you've been doing this forever, Elise. Not forever. You know what I mean? You've been doing it a long time.
Forever.
You're
an expert. It feels like forever.
Yes.
But you're doing your Money Matters show, right?
But I mean, this is probably the first time that, this year where I've really, really been paying attention every day. And that can kind of be a little overwhelming when you do it. So I just want to know, on Wednesday, we got the announcement from Jerome Powell, and we had just a huge day. It was the 50 basis points. It's exactly what people expected. He indicated that maybe they wouldn't go higher. And it's like everyone went to sleep Wednesday night and just completely changed their entire mindset Thursday morning, and it hasn't gone back the other way since. Is there any other explanation for how you can change so differently from Wednesday afternoon to today?
Well, it's called welcome to the bond market. I think that you have to understand a little bit about what's driving these markets, and it goes back to inflation. And what is it going to take to get inflation under control? Well, there were some scary comments that were made between, Wednesday and today, and Friday till today, where people started talking about how we may need a very severe recession to get inflation under control. Well, severe recession is really different than what everybody else has been saying, is we're going to have a soft landing, it's going to be okay. And so when you start getting scary comments like that from people who have in the past been known to get things right, it makes people very jittery. And so then they sell quickly and you end up seeing these kinds of sharp dives. The other reason that we're seeing this, I think, is we're also seeing that different pillars of the stock market, Apple, Microsoft, Google, some of those companies have not been hitting their targets and, in fact, are seeing a contraction. And that scares people, too, because that's supposed to be the bellwether.
Right.
Google says it's not hitting its numbers. That's concerning to everybody. So people are always trying to get ahead of the sell curve. And it's very, very difficult to do that. So you see what's happening today.
Elise Glink, we have a question from the 630. Mind taking a quick question for us?
Not at all.
Here it is. I am contributing a chunk of change of every paycheck to my 401k. Woot woot. That's what I'll say first and foremost. My husband stated I should discontinue this and put it into my savings. I just turned 60 and I'm thinking that I am buying shares at a much lower cost with the markets down. And when the market rebounds, they'll greatly appreciate. Which is best? I think I know what you're going to say, Elise, but you go ahead.
Well, I completely agree. I think she's super smart, Ms. 630.
Yep.
Thank you so much for calling in. You know, this is the hardest thing that people have to do. Get over the mental hump that says, oh my God, the market's falling. I don't want to invest now. That's a losing proposition. But that's precisely how you miss the run-up, which is going to follow. And I'm not suggesting, because gosh knows, I don't have the crystal ball. Nobody has a crystal ball. But if you look over the past 100 plus years of the stock market, deep dives are followed by, you know, rising, you know, numbers. So if you
often
look at
quickly, too.
Often quickly. I mean, I don't think that we're going to see the kind of recovery that we saw after, well, at the beginning of the pandemic,
right,
when the stock market dropped
at
30-40% overnight. But I do think that over the next years, we get through whatever it is we need to get through in order to get inflation under control. We're going to see things come back because the underlying economics, the fundamentals in this country are really strong. We have a very strong job market. There are a lot of jobs. The jobs are paying better than they've paid in a long time. People are desperate to get people to come work for them. And so you've got those mechanics of the economy working. We're also starting to see the logistics of supply chain starting to come through as well. People are understanding more about what's going wrong with it. They're fixing things by building it either here in the U.S. or other places where there's more control. This is also going to be very good for the economy, John.
Yeah. I just think that it's like, if you're in a position where you know, and first of all, this texture is 60, God willing, 35 more 40 years, right? Like, I mean, come on. I mean, this is not a time to be putting money into savings as long as you have, you know, your 6-month emergency savings or whatever you feel is appropriate and what you need. Obviously, that's paramount number one. But I mean, this might be a time for people to examine their 401k, and if they can, up the contribution a little bit, right?
Yeah, no. And also, don't forget that there's a tax benefit to contributing to a 401k, a 403b, or other kind of pre-tax, you know, tax-deductible, tax-deferred account. So if you make, you know, $50,000 a year and you're contributing $10,000 of that to your 401k, you're getting taxed on $40,000 a year.
Right.
Effectively, right? It reduces the amount of income that's subjected to tax. Now, you recapture that on the other side. You pay it down the line. But the point is, more of your dollars go to buying the stock or the investment, the mutual fund. Typically, 401ks offer mutual funds, not individual stocks. But more of that goes to purchase it. And when stock prices are down, it's the double bump, right?
Yeah.
Because you're getting to put more of those dollars away. So I'm in favor of it. I hope everybody is still maxing out their 401ks. And just try not to look at what the total value is. Just get in there, make the investment, do dollar cost averaging where you're doing some in various intervals, and just forget about it.
Yeah, 630, you are the right one, especially if you're getting a match. I don't even want to go down that road of just putting, you'd be missing money and leaving it on the table if you're getting a match. Anyways, I'm getting heated here, and we still got a long way to go. All right, Elise, interest rates, they're heating up. Boy, aren't they.
Yeah, national rate today, according to Bankrate, is almost 5.5% for a 30-year fixed rate loan. You can get a little bit lower than that. You can pay points. We've seen the refi market die completely, basically. And there are a lot of people who are getting laid off from jobs in the mortgage industry right now. But you can get in there. You can buy something. It's just going to cost you more money. But again, once we get inflation under control, my guess is we're going to start to see interest rates come down a little bit below where they are today. So take heart there, John. I don't think we're in for a market where we're going to see what I paid for my first house, 11.75% anytime soon.
Oh, yeah. Boy, my parents love to shove that in my face anytime I talk about complaining on paying for a house. Like, in my day, when we built the house you grew up in, 13%. Yes, I get it. Okay. Worst cities for commuters. Chicago coming in at number what, Elise?
Well, it's number 7 on the worst city, so that's not a good place. But
no.
It was interesting that Detroit is at the top.
Yeah.
This comes from Clever Real Estate, and they were looking at the best and worst cities for commute based on time and the money you're going to spend. And so the average commute, this was super interesting. The average commute for the worst cities is about $10,000 a year compared to $8,400 a year. It's 22% more expensive to commute in a city like Chicago, New York City, Atlanta. Atlanta's like the second worst.
Mm-hmm.
Houston is on that list. Dallas, Texas is on the list. So there's definitely a cost when you have to get on the road. And honestly, anybody in Chicago can now go on the road. It feels like we never had a pandemic. That was the best part about the pandemic. No traffic.
Right.
And it's back, baby.
It is. Boy, you know, and I know this is, you know, I was driving on the weekend, I think on Saturday, maybe I was coming here, and I just am like, where is everybody going? But I know they're all thinking the same thing about me. Like, come on, even on a Saturday.
There is just so much traffic out there, and the roads are in just awful condition. Yeah. I've been driving all over. You'd think that we had the worst winter in history, given how bad the roads are, but I know they're out there today. We're starting to fix them up.
Yeah, there we go. It's construction season. Elise Glink, always great to chat with you. Thanks for chiming in, okay?
It's a pleasure. Thank you, John.
Of course, you can sign up for Elise Glink's newsletters, glink.substack.com or thinkglink.com. Of course, she's on Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. This Week in Wealth. I'm John Hanson on this gorgeous Monday. The market's not so much. Focus on the sun. You don't have to stare right at it, but just get outside at least for a moment today if you can. Better weather ahead. We'll get to that in a bit. Jim Dahlke, what do you do, Jim Dahlke, on a gorgeous day like this, senior editor of Chicago NO?
Oh, man, try not to get a sunburn. That is the goal number one when the sun finally comes out for somebody with a pale complexion like myself.
All right, there you go. Even on a day like this, 5 minutes will get you a little burn there?
Oh, you bet. You bet. But enjoying it very much. Love to get the dog out for a walk.
Absolutely. Hey, not such great news last week from Cameo, which is that celebrity video service where you can order your favorite celebrity, local or national, to make a video for you. They're based out of Chicago, but we got some bad news from them.
Yeah, so Cameo last week laid off about a quarter of its workforce. That came out to 87 employees. Bummer news for one of Chicago's rocket ship tech companies. Cameo, of course, has become one of the most notable Chicago-founded businesses. This is a company that in 2021 raised $100 million at a $1 billion valuation. Chicago is certainly not a city known for consumer apps, and Cameo has definitely sort of put Chicago on the map in that space in a big way. So Cameo, really at this point, indicative of what we're starting to see broadly, right? There's going to be a little bit more of this happening, I think, across the tech landscape. You're starting to see a few major tech companies make some similar layoff announcements. Robinhood, OnDeck. We're starting to see a little bit of a pullback in startup land. It'll be interesting to see kind of how this progresses throughout the summer.
Yeah, and it is that post-pandemic, right? Like, people had time. I even ordered a Cameo during the pandemic for my brother, who was actually sick. And I was like, oh, that'll be a fun way to do things. I think a lot of people taking advantage of that. And it's unfortunate to see, though, for a local company that they got to come down a little bit, hopefully much more lined up with where they need to be. Let's talk about Mark Cuban. Boy, he gets in the news every now and then, doesn't he?
Yeah, so Mark Cuban is an investor in a Chicago startup, actually. This company is called Paladin. They are a legal technology startup. Really what they do is they help lawyers increase their pro bono work. Lawyers, based on, in their profession, have a certain amount of pro bono work that they are required to do or expected to do. That's from the American Bar Association, which asks lawyers to provide about 50 hours of work per year pro bono. And really what Paladin does is kind of help companies do that. So they connect with law firms and in-house legal counsels and really streamline, source, and track their pro bono work and pro bono opportunities. For lawyers, it's kind of a daunting task to find the next opportunity and don't exactly always know where to look to find work, and this platform really is able to fix that. So the other week they raised $8 million in a Series A round. Mark Cuban is among the investors in Paladin, a handful of other Chicago investors on there as well, and a really needed platform. And really one interesting thing they're doing too is they're working in the Ukraine relief effort. So they are connecting lawyers to opportunities to connect folks down in Ukraine during the war.
Is it just that lawyers, it's like an internal app that lawyers can use or a platform that they can use? Or is this also, are there going to be users that can submit requests for pro bono work and that's how they connect the dots a little bit?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it works as a marketplace, right? So there's an opportunity to, request work and also to find work. So that's, I think, a big piece of the app there. And really, it's they're working with some major law firms. So they've got what they say that, tens of thousands of folks have been able to find additional work, and they work with some pretty major law firms, as well as some in-house counsels of some pretty big companies like Verizon, for example, uses them. So really, interesting tool here within the legal tech space.
That's great. We talked to World Business Chicago last week on Your Money Matters about a new program they were doing to help lift up businesses in the west and south sides of the city to try and give a little bit more balance to where the equity is being spent. As we look at Chicago and how it lines up against other countries, we're actually doing a pretty good job for seed funding for Black and Latino founders. Not to say we can't do better, but it looks like Chicago is at the forefront of this.
That's right. And, you know, we've been really tracking this at Chicago NO for years. And Chicago has really, you know, candidly fallen woefully behind in funding startups led by Black and Latino founders, which, you know, for a city as diverse as Chicago with such, you know, high populations of Black and brown folks, the fact that there was little funding going to those founders was disappointing. And, you know, really many Chicago startup founders over the last couple of years have really worked intensely to change that. And that is starting to show some really positive results. So the report by P33, which is a nonprofit civic organization in Chicago working to boost the tech community, found that Chicago had the highest percentage of angel and seed stage investments going to Black and Latino founders of any major tech hub. So 13% of the seed funding last year went to Chicago founders who are Black or Latino. That is more than Miami, who came in at second place at 8%, DC 7%, Atlanta 6%, and so on. So certainly encouraging news there for Chicago. The city actually nearly tripled its investment in Black and Latino startup founders since 2019. So that is a result of a couple of different things, right? There are some new funds in Chicago that are focused on this very specifically. Funds like Long Jump, funds like the Fifth Star Funds. There are a handful of initiatives really kind of working to change the narrative here in Chicago, and it's starting to pay off.
Yeah, for sure. When we talk about things that everyone agrees on, lower drug prices seems to be at the top of the list. And we've had administration after administration trying to do this, including the current one, and Congress all saying they want to do it. They can't. So it looks like Walt's Health is doing their own gift, their own efforts now to try and lower drug costs.
Yeah, so this Chicago startup, Walt's Health, is working to tackle this exactly. So this is a company that's creating a platform that helps help people find lower cost prescription drugs. They just raised $35 million in funding the other week. Google was one of the main investors in that startup round. Pretty significant. Google doesn't typically invest in a ton of Chicago startups, but certainly big news there. And so really this company, Waltz, is led by Mark Thierer, the former CEO of Optum Rx, which is the pharmacy benefits company that was acquired by United Health several years ago. So now at Waltz, they are really tackling the problem of rising prescription drug costs. But, you know, rather than competing with the traditional pharmacy industry, kind of like startups like Mark Cuban has an online pharmacy startup, for example, Waltz works with retail pharmacies to provide transparency around the pricing they've created. Basically, what's essentially an online search engine that they can white label for pharmacies that they can give to their customers. The database lets customers kind of compare prices for medication and easily view prescription savings programs. So pretty interesting pharmacy tech startup out of Chicago.
That's great stuff. All right, Jim Dahlke, go get yourself some 75 SPF, slap it all over, and take a five-minute walk, okay, bud?
Thanks, Tom.
ChicagoInno.com. All right, let's get the Wintrust Business Minute. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Funding for startups in Chicago is down so far in 2022. Data from PitchBook shows a drop of 26% in the first quarter compared to the fourth quarter of last year. Startups pulled in $1.4 billion in the first quarter. That's 30% below the same quarter last year. Chicago Inno reports the quarter did continue a string of six quarters with Chicago tech companies raising at least $1 billion. Chicago's $1.4 billion raise was good for eighth most in the U.S. last quarter, pacing behind the Bay Area, New York, Los Angeles, Boston, Washington, D.C., Seattle, and Austin. Americans looking to stretch their dollar may want to consider moving to Illinois or Tennessee, according to a new study from Rocket Mortgage. Tennessee is the cheapest state to buy a home in 2022 so far. Low cost of living, lack of income tax, and low property taxes help Tennessee come out on top. Illinois ranks second cheapest, and Indiana lands seventh on the list. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time now for the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, it isn't just the equities that are in the red today. Let's go to the Chicago Board of Trade, where corn is down 13.5 cents. That's 7.71 1/4. Soybeans are down over 2%, 38 cents lower at 15.84 a bushel. And wheat right now is trading down about 14.5 cents at 10.94 a bushel. And now the business of food.
Now, another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic
tomato grower
the world has ever known.
Chicago Tomato Man!
He's everywhere!
Hello.
Is the Chicago Tomato Man?
Yes, it is. My name is Bob Zini.
Hi, Bob. How did you become Chicago Tomato Man?
I was always interested in gardening. I'm self-employed as a graphic designer, and I work out of my house. The isolation in the winter got kind of odd, so I tried heavy drinking.
He's kidding about that part.
My wife,
Wendy,
suggested that I start plants in the basement.
Tomato plants, heirlooms.
They were tasty, and the more I learned, the more I wanted to grow other varieties.
He started sharing with neighbors and friends, and
they told other people, and people wanted to buy them. One thing led to another, and here we are.
And where we are is that Chicago Tomato Man Bob Zini has grown over 4,000 tomato plants this year that he's been selling, and the final batch go on sale today at ChicagoTomatoMan.com.
If we last until 5 o'clock, I'd be surprised.
His tomatoes are not their run-of-the-mill varieties you find piled up in grocery stores.
Those tasteless travesties.
Bob raises only heirloom tomatoes, which doesn't mean they're old. It's just a reference to how they're bred.
So you can have new heirlooms. Tasty and colorful, durable.
Do you have a favorite?
Oh, I would have to say the green zebra.
$6 a plant, and he gives most of that away to a nonprofit called the Gardeniers.
And what they do is build gardens and work with students in neighborhoods where access to fresh fruit is very limited.
And by the way, whether you buy from Bob Zini or somebody else,
I would not plant them for at least another 2 weeks.
Bob Zini, the
Chicago Tomato Man!
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
Apologies to the late Dick Orkin and anybody involved in Chicken Man. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us now. And Amy, I wanted to talk about this baby formula story first. 40% of America's baby formula supplies out of stock. I'm almost like flabbergasted to read that stat.
Yeah, it's a really stunning number, and it's up so dramatically. So in March, we saw that about 29% out of stock. To jump that much, up to 40% as of April 24th. So that's a really big deal. And I mean, if you think about how often you have to feed a baby, 1 to 2 ounces every 2 to 3 hours, that's a lot of formula that you'd be going through if your infant uses formula. So a lot of parents are obviously very concerned. Some retailers are limiting how much you can buy. So mm-hmm. Walgreens and CVS have both reportedly put a 3-container limit on parents, which, again, if you're thinking about how much formula you go through, that can be a lot of running around to locate
right.
New jars of it there. But, you know, a lot of this has to do with this recall. So that's really a big, big piece of that. Because of Abbott Labs, there was a facility in Sturgis, Michigan. So that plant was linked to a cluster of illnesses, including 2 deaths of infants. So it was subsequently closed down by the FDA after federal safety inspectors found that Abbott had failed to maintain the sanitary conditions and procedures at the facility and found bacteria in samples of the product. So Abbott makes so many different types of baby formula. That's really a lot of what's going on here. And then by state, it breaks down even more.
Right.
If you're looking at particular statewide issues, some states reaching as high as 57% out of stock, which is a really stunning number.
And I imagine they're limited to it because if people hear this, they might rush and go buy as many as they can, which is just going to exacerbate the problem. So they're trying to just limit that rush buying.
Yeah, that's exactly what a couple of the retailers have said. Target hasn't quite made any kind of rules around buying it in person, but they have put some rules around how many you can buy online if you're shopping online for it. So I'm sure that's very stressful for a lot of parents, but heads up. that is happening. And we'll see how that shakes out in May, if that gets restarted, if this is maybe the worst of it, or if there's a little more to come.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, let's talk about the infrastructure package that was passed, the bipartisan one, and included a lot of effort to get more people online. And we got new announcements about that today.
That's right. So the Associated Press and some other outlets have been reporting on this. So in that $1 trillion infrastructure package that Congress passed last year, about $14.2 billion in there was funding for something called the Affordable Connectivity Program. So that provides about $30 monthly subsidies to households, or $75 for tribal reservation areas, for internet service for millions of low-income households. So the Biden administration announced earlier today that 20 different internet companies have agreed to provide discount service to low-income Americans. So combining that subsidy and that arrangement of these providers, if members of those households receiving that subsidy go through some of these low-cost providers that have agreed, any of these 20 providers, they could be eligible for free internet access. You know, and there was a point where I think a lot of people probably considered internet sort of a luxury in the household, but really, I mean, think about it. All the things you cannot do if you don't have the ability to hop online. We certainly saw that last year and the year before in the pandemic with children at school. A lot of them didn't have the high-speed access at home, and so they were suffering educationally. Most job applications are done online, most bill pay, things like that. So a lot of banking. There's so much that we need internet for in our lives. So this would be potentially really a very, very big move. So some 48 million households could be eligible for these plans, and it would be 100 megabits per second. So that's considered high-speed service. I will carefully watch that roll out for sure.
Hey, this headline is intriguing. Nearly 300,000 U.S. service members and veterans are suing 3M over a tiny piece of military gear they said didn't work. What was that piece?
That is a piece of plastic that is part of the earplugs that are issued. And so 3M has been making earplugs for service members from 2008 to 2015. They were making them. When they bought that contract from the original company, there was some evidence suggests in some reporting that they had made a decision to make a tiny piece of plastic slightly smaller just to save costs associated with. But a lot of service members have been suing. And so now it's 290,000 service members are suing, saying these earplugs didn't work and they've caused long-term hearing damage.
Oh man, that's no good. And just for a cost-saving measure, we'll have to keep a tight eye on that. Amy Guth, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, John. Always a pleasure.
And we worked out the demons too.